You're listening to the Musical Ecologies Radio Hour. I'm your host, Dan Joseph, and once a month we bring you a mix of conversations and musical selections by artists featured on the Musical Ecology series in Park Slope, Brooklyn. I invite you to visit our website for more information on our artists and upcoming events at musicalecologies.net. For tonight's program, we'll revisit our event on February 11th with New York-based sound artist Ranjit Bhatnagar. Combining technology, language, and found materials, Ranjit is known for his ingenious interactive installations and invented musical instruments. Each year since 2008, he has dedicated the month of February to his epic Instrument a Day project, wherein he creates a new homemade musical instrument on each day of the month. During our event, which fell right in the middle of this annual marathon project, we discussed the history of the Instrument a Day project and how he came to be a sound artist, among many other topics. Later, Ranjit performed several recent mixed media works and demonstrated some of his newest musical instruments. But we'll begin tonight's broadcast with my conversation with sound artist Ranjit Bhatnagar at the Old Stone House in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Excited to have Ranjit Bhatnagar joining us. Welcome, Ranjit.
Thank you.
And so we always begin our evenings with a conversation. And so with that, I want to welcome you again. And so I guess a good place to start is really the kind of the focal point this month. Maybe we could start there with the Instrument a Day project, which is a project that you, I guess you initiated, what, 9 years ago or 10?
Yeah, 9 years ago.
So just, well, I'll let you tell the story, I guess, please.
Yeah,
if you could.
Yeah, it was about 9 years ago. I took a workshop on whistle making around January 30th or 31st, and I thought, this is fun, I want to make more whistles. Mm-hmm. And about the same time, I discovered a project run by some NYU students called Thing a Day, where they had a website encouraging people to make one creative project every day in February.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, okay, I could make a whistle every day,
mm-hmm.
but I quickly got sick of that and thought, okay, I'll just make an instrument every day in February. Mm-hmm. And so I did that in 2007 or whenever it was, 2008. And then
right.
I did it again the next year and then again the next year and so forth. And somehow it became a kind of a ritual. It's a really fun way to push my boundaries, to try new things and learn new stuff.
Mm-hmm. Great. So how did you choose February? Just, was there any rhyme or reason to that? Or
I chose it because that was when Thing a Day was.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Yeah, that was the inspiration.
Right. And this
also, February is the shortest month, so it's easy.
by a slim margin.
Yeah, and it's a leap year this year, so less easy.
Right. I see. So the Thing a Day, this was a program somewhere within the NYU program?
Was not in the NYU program, but it was just run by some NYU students. They posted a website where everyone could register their projects.
Uh-huh.
They made a sort of shared blog where eventually thousands of people every day were posting their one creative thing every day.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And that project kind of died out a few years ago, but I keep going.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, it's quite ambitious, I mean, to do anything every day, I mean, even for a short month. So
yeah.
So an instrument a day. I mean, that's in this case, it's a pretty broad field. I mean, what constitutes an instrument for you? Is that right? Or I mean, I've been following it for a few years now, and
uh-huh.
it seems like there's quite a range of stuff, bringing in all kinds of different tools and approaches and mm-hmm. and results. So
yeah, I definitely define instruments very broadly. Because for one thing, I have to make, for every day, it has to be something I can get done in a couple hours,
mm-hmm.
sometimes, and just a few minutes if I'm working that day.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a sound artist, I make sound sculptures and installations and stuff, so I really like having everything in this project be related to sound.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't go so far as to make a light sculpture and call it an instrument,
mm-hmm.
but a few days ago, I actually made a tool which makes no noise at all, but it's the tool for boring out the holes where the tuning pegs on a violin go.
I see.
And that might be very useful, or I might never make a violin, so I might never use it. But at least loosely speaking, it counts for my project.
Sure. Well, so it's an instrument that will be used to make a musical sounding instrument. So it has sound potentiality built into it then, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's one example of, I guess, that one end of the range. I mean, I guess in some cases this year, like the one that you posted, well, I should say that you document these and share them, you know, pretty vigorously. I mean, that's a big part of it. Yeah, on that website, and with integrating Flickr and other platforms.
That's for the first few years, I was taking photos and making sound recordings of every project, mm-hmm. and then maybe 5 years ago, I finally had a camera that could take good videos, mm-hmm. so I started posting videos of every project.
So before that, it was just pictures and sound recordings separately.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of the ritual, it seems. I mean,
yeah.
And I guess it was from the start, the documenting.
Uh-huh.
So that's a lot of instruments in 9 years, right? I mean,
yeah.
Where do you put them all? I mean, what becomes of them? You know, I mean, we can't speak to all of them, but generally,
A lot of them are just ephemeral, or they don't have any physical existence anyway. Like you mentioned earlier, a few days ago I posted a field recording, which isn't quite an instrument as some would define it, but it's good enough for me.
Right. Now this was a video, like a video sound and video recording of Prospect Park. That's what, you know.
Yeah.
And of the planes flying over times four, right? Four uh-huh. different scenes. So.
Yeah.
And then or sort of assembled together into a grid or something.
Yeah. Because the planes fly over Prospect Park every 2 minutes or so. And so I made four recordings of the planes flying over and then layered them so that it sounded like the four planes going simultaneously.
Right.
Because they have a sort of musical tone of their own as the pitch changes as they go over.
Sure. And then the collaging of them all together is another. So that's a composition to a certain extent as well.
I mean, uh-huh.
So. But also an instrument. So,
sure.
So this is a huge project, and I encourage everyone to check out the Ranjit's archive at moonmilk.com. There's a lot of great stuff. So, but to go on about what becomes of them, I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. some of them are ephemeral, but you have constructed a lot of instruments. You know?
Yeah, I've made a lot of things. A lot of them, they just get stuck in a drawer and they vanish after a while, or I throw them away, or they get reused for another project. Mm-hmm. And so probably of the 8 years and 2 weeks of the project so far, there's probably only a couple dozen that have actually survived and are still sitting around, and maybe three or four that are really favorites that I'll actually dig out now and then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I'm trying to create a library of instruments for an orchestra or anything like that. This is a personal experiment, a kind of a ritual. And so the vast majority of the things I make, it's a great experience to make them, and the documentation is useful, mm-hmm. but it's not necessarily an object that I would want to keep forever.
Right. Okay, I understand. So this Instrument a Day project then is just a part of your larger project as a sound artist,
mm-hmm.
and in the course of these daily projects, you know, you're bringing in all kinds of different tools and procedures and technologies and so on, and I want to learn a little bit more about your background and how you've come to all these different. I mean, you know, there's all these ingenious different ways that you're working every day, right? That's like mm-hmm. a new invention, basically. I mean, I understand you have somewhat of a science and technology background, at least uh-huh. from your education. So how did that sort of stuff, and maybe you could talk more about that background, but also how it came to be marshaled into these kinds of creative projects and sound?
Yeah.
That's a big question. But.
Well, I'm very much into craft and handwork mm-hmm. as just a really interesting thing, and something that's been kind of devalued in the 20th and early 21st century mm-hmm. because of industrialization and consumer electronics and things like that, where products that you buy now are far more sophisticated and complex than you could possibly make by yourself. And in many ways, they're really good for that. Mm-hmm. But it also kind of tends to devalue the handmade, except as a sort of luxury object sometimes.
Right.
And I'm kind of interested in hand making and not making luxury objects. Like I said, I make mostly garbage. but really interesting garbage.
Right, or you also use garbage in some cases, or at least found objects.
And I have literally picked things out of the garbage and said, okay, this is my instrument for today.
Right, although that's not necessarily a rule, so to speak, but I just observed that you're just kind of pulling in from everywhere and anywhere, mm-hmm. right? So it's...
Part of it is trying to keep an open mind about what I, as an artist, can do. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have a lot of formal training either as an artist or a musician. And mm-hmm. so there's a lot of sort of psychological pressure of saying, oh, you can't do that because you don't know how. You mm-hmm. can't do that because you didn't go to school for it and things like that. Mm-hmm. So part of it is just saying, okay, well, if I want to make a violin in a day, I can do it. And I did. And I gave it to a real violinist and she said it was okay. It wasn't a good violin, but it was playable.
Right, well.
But at the same time, I could also just knock some icicles off of a scaffold and listen to the tinkling sounds as they fall and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. call that an instrument, and that's nice too.
Absolutely. Well, good. Well. So, how did you arrive at being a sound artist, as you say, without having training as an artist or a musician or otherwise?
Yeah.
What was the chronology or what was the aha moment or that sort of thing?
I really don't know what that would be, but some of my earliest memories, probably from when I was 4 or 5 years old, are of, and this is common to a lot of people, they say they loved when they were kids playing with those spring doorstops that you pluck the spring that is screwed into the wall and it makes a doing noise, and the wall acts as a resonator, so it's really loud and it has a kind of cool phasing sound as the thing goes roaring. And then also I would listen to helicopters flying over and the Doppler effect of the helicopters. I can remember even when I was 4 or 5 comparing those two things, the sound of the spring as its phase changes, as it slows down or speeds up or whatever it's doing, and the sound of the Doppler of the helicopters. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, at least, sound and language are my primary sense. Some people, the vision is the primary sense. For me, mm-hmm. sound is primary. Mm-hmm. So I just like it.
Right.
I like playing with it.
Well, and so when did you begin creating sound works or sound objects or otherwise? I mean, when did you start being an artist? I mean, when did that happen?
I have no idea.
So when you were 5 or 10 or 20? It just was sort of a gradual thing, and suddenly you realized that's what I am or that's what I do? Or
yeah, just gradual, playing with things and then showing them off and people saying, okay, that's not so bad.
So when you studied at Berkeley, right? Mm-hmm. And then you went to Carnegie Mellon, Pennsylvania, I'm sorry,
yeah.
Penn. So so you were studying what, primarily?
Engineering,
okay.
Yeah.
So what was your, well, I guess, is that still a part of your, I mean, it's certainly part of your work, but in terms of your larger life, I mean, what were you pursuing in those years, and how did that end up, I guess? And
well, at the time, I thought that I was on the path to be an academic, a professor, mm-hmm. because both my parents are professors, and they never really let me know that there was any other path in life mm-hmm. besides becoming a professor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I sort of wandered off of that path accidentally.
Accidentally? So yeah. How was it an accident, then? Or what was the accident? You slipped?
I don't know. Yeah, when I was in an undergraduate, I started making compositions for the experimental music group there at Berkeley.
Oh, okay.
And I had a visual arts show at the student union and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking, this is more fun than academics.
And this was when you were a graduate student?
Started undergrad, yes.
Yeah. But then you went on to pursue more engineering studies
uh-huh.
after that.
Yeah.
And were you still active with artistic projects during those years in Philadelphia? Or
Yeah, to some extent, mm-hmm. yeah. And then my first big sound art installation was at a gallery in Philadelphia mm-hmm. in 95, I think.
Mm, okay. Excellent. So what about the engineering side, as I was saying, will be evident, it certainly informs a lot of what you do, right? Or on some level.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's, high tech and low tech to varying degrees. But there's also the computer aspect. I mean, to what extent are you a coder or a, programmer? I mean, I know that you're using Macs tonight, right? Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I mean, is that a big part of your life and of your sound work?
It's pretty big because I'm just barely good enough at coding to make a living at it.
Uh-huh.
So that used to be my main occupation.
I see.
And now I do consulting and things like that, and that helps to pay the bills. And these days it's maybe 50-50 consulting and art practice.
I see. So writing apps or you know, database stuff or just a range of coding projects or
It seems to be a lot of interactive kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For the last few years, I've been working with a couple of small companies that do basically crazy art installations for marketing purposes.
Uh-huh. I see.
Which means that I get to do weird creative stuff and learn new and weird skills, but also get paid well for it, which mm-hmm. doesn't happen so much with fine art.
Absolutely. So is this like art galleries or art fairs? Or
it'll be for things for a TV commercial or for a product launch party or something like that.
That's it. Okay.
But we'll build an interactive sculpture, a drawing machine, or a giant LED sculpture or something like that.
Okay. And you're brought in for the coding side of it or to make it interact and work and happen.
Yeah, or to help build things.
I see. Well, that's great. So you're basically that part of your life is just a freelance, self-employed kind of thing at this point.
Yeah,
right? Excellent. So as far as the you know your art practice work, so you're as you've mentioned several times. I mean, you do installations and
uh-huh.
and other. I mean, so what are some of the projects that you know some of your recent projects say that have involved an installation or that have been shown out there in the world?
Yeah, well, one recent one is at Caramore Center for Music and the Arts
right.
up in Westchester County. It's if you don't know it, it's a music venue, mostly classical music, that's on a beautiful old suburban estate. And
a big summer festival primarily, right?
Is the, yeah.
The majority of it is summer concerts all.
Yeah, they have a lot of, they have outdoor. Like three or four outdoor stages mm-hmm. and they have they have folk and classical and jazz mostly,
right?
Especially classical.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of years ago, they co-sponsored a sound art festival
right.
where they commissioned 10 pretty large-scale site-specific sound installations, and I was lucky to be one of those mm-hmm. chosen.
And what was your work for that? I mean, just you know, briefly, or not? I don't know.
It was a stone sculpture. I was interested in hiring stonemasons to actually build this thing for me, since I almost always do all my work by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it was neat actually working with a team of artisans to make this thing happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a stone sculpture made using, it was kind of inspired by all the stone walls you see all around Westchester County.
Mm-hmm.
If you drive anywhere there, you see all the roads are lined with old stone walls.
Right.
So we made this sculpture using the dry stone walling technique where the stones aren't cemented together, they're just piled up.
Mm-hmm.
And I stuck a bunch of pressure sensors in between the stones. So there's a little tiny computer hidden inside that's constantly measuring the weight of the stones.
Oh, wow.
And it turns that into a kind of musical soundscape.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that over the years, as the dirt settles underneath and things erode and water gets in and freezes, all the stones are going to shift slightly. And so over the years, the tune it plays is going to change very
mm-hmm.
slowly.
Interesting. So there's a network of sensors that are measuring pressure.
Yeah.
Right, and that fixed number or that number at that moment is producing a pitch or some kind of a tone or something.
Yeah.
And
it's a bit more complicated than that, but only a bit more.
Right. So is it permanently sounding? I mean, how does one hear it? Are there speakers?
Yeah, there's speakers that are actually hidden inside the sculpture, and because it's not cemented, there's all these cracks where the sound gets out, which is kind of neat because you can't really mm-hmm. tell where the sound is coming from. It just sort of leaks out of the stones.
I see. And it's, I guess, weatherproof to some extent.
I hope so. This is its second year out.
And it's still
this
going.
Is its first time out through the winter because last winter was disassembled and just lying in a pile. But this winter, I hope it'll survive.
All right. You check on it from time to time?
Uh-huh.
And it's still
yeah.
going?
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it's there on the lawn at the Caramore Center in Katona, so you can visit it anytime.
Excellent.
What's the title of that work?
It's called Stone Song. Stone Song. But I kind of really regret that I didn't call it Drone Henge.
That's pretty good. Huh? Well, there's always the next piece, right?
Yep.
Well, excellent. So, well, I wanted to, so this leads me to think about something else I wanted to ask you, but I want to rewind a little bit. You said that you describe yourself as being more, you know, auditory oriented.
Yeah.
But I also know about your, you know, you do some visual art projects too, and one that I've been following for a long time is your vegetable scans, or mostly vegetables, but other things too. These scanning of produce and different plants and things.
Yeah.
So that's a very visual thing. I mean, so yeah. not to challenge your own statement, but nonetheless, you do work in that way as well, and I find that very interesting. So, to what extent do you have a visual arts practice as well?
I don't have one on purpose, but this particular project, actually, maybe you could say that the one thing that ties all these together is ritual, because it turns out that if I ever do something twice, then I feel compelled to do it a third time, and so on, and then I get stuck doing it forever. So I've been doing this vegetable scanning project now for, I think, 10 or 12 years, and there's like 900 images in the series, because I do it at least every month, usually every week. It adds up.
For 3 or 4 years or something, or if you're doing it every week. Wow. Or no, that's more year. But to get 900, that's many years.
I've been doing it for 10 or 12 years, and sometimes I would make 3 or 4 images per week. Sometimes I'll miss a few weeks.
Right, and so we're talking about flatbed scanning of a little arrangement of and often they come directly from the farmer's market. Is that right?
Always, that's one of the rules. That's another thing about rituals, that they have to have rules.
I see.
So like this particular photo series is only things that I buy at the green market.
I see. Right, at Grand Army Plaza.
Yeah, or any New York green market.
Any green market. I see.
Yeah. Okay. But then that reminds me to talk about the rules for Instrument a Day.
Sure.
And the main interesting rule, the main rule that people find interesting, is that there is no planning ahead. I try really hard not to think in advance what I'm going to make tomorrow or what I'm going to make next week. I try to leave all the decisions for the moment of, so if I have 30 minutes to make something or if I have 3 hours, that time includes trying to figure out what the hell am I going to make today.
Right.
And I don't always have to follow these rules, of course. I'll break the rules, like if I know that I want to make something with laser cut wood, then I'll order some wood. Mm-hmm.
It's a little planning.
I can do a little planning. If I know there are certain materials I want or certain ideas that I have, I'll order the parts or start thinking a little bit. But I try really hard not to think ahead if possible.
So you wake up in the morning and that's when you start figuring out what time of day you're going to do this.
Like I wake up in the morning and then I frantically do my regular work. And then at 10 p.m. I'm thinking, okay, I have 2 hours left. And I pace for 90 minutes around the house picking up objects and thinking, is this an interesting object? Does it have possibilities? Mm-hmm. And then I try to get it done before midnight.
I see. Right. So I guess this is, I have observed that a number of your posts on Twitter are late at night. In fact, I don't usually see them until the next morning.
And I do sometimes miss the midnight deadline, and I'll go to bed, and then I'll edit the video and post it the next day. But I try not to.
Right.
Because that's part of the fun, is to try to follow the rules, even if it's not always possible.
Right. Excellent.
And so I should also point out that I haven't yet done an Instrument a Day for today. So one of the performances is going to be today's Instrument a Day, which is not really tested, so I mean, I can say that about everything, because what I'm going to do today is mostly made up of things that I've only made in the last few days. It's not like I've had years to practice and get good at them, so I don't quite know what'll happen. Mm-hmm. And then one of them, which you'll see later, is today's instrument, so I'm going to be taping it myself so that I can post the traditional video before midnight if I can, and we'll see what happens.
Great. So an instrument today will be revealed today, right here, for the first time.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, I just have a few more things. I mean, we don't want to talk all night, but
I don't mind talking all night, because that saves me from having to perform. I'm not usually a performer, I should say. I'm an artist who works in a solitary studio all huddled up by myself, and actually getting out here and performing for people is really scary. but it's also one of the best things that I ever get to do. Mm-hmm. And while I'm thinking of it, before I forget, Terry Dame is here. Terry runs a monthly series called Weird Wednesdays, where she invites musicians who make their own instruments or play non-traditional instruments to perform. And the next Weird Wednesday is coming up on Thursday, because Thursday is the weirdest of Wednesdays, coming up on Thursday the 25th at Bar Bess, a beautiful little bar and venue here in Park Slope. So Thursday the 25th, Weird Wednesday, and I'm going to be there along with Terry and the Weird Wednesday All-Stars. So please come if you can.
Excellent. The 25th?
25th, yeah.
Weird Wednesday on Thursday.
Yeah.
The weirdest Wednesday.
Yes.
Is on Thursday.
Exactly.
Wonderful.
It's odd and fantastic.
Well, that's great. So you do perform, then, but this is...
It's unusual. Very rarely. Very it's rare. Unusual.
So twice in 1 month. Is that even rarer still?
Yeah.
For you? Well, that's great. Well, I guess the one question that I keep thinking about throughout all of your work, not every single thing you do, but it seems to me overall, and you know, I've gotten to know you. You know, you live here in the neighborhood as well, mm-hmm. and I'm in the neighborhood. The series is in the neighborhood, so I've gotten to know your work pretty well over these years. And there's, you know, it seems to me a pretty strong environmental consciousness or sensibility that seems to be a part of a lot of your work. Is that something you think about, or is it just happens? Or?
It's totally not conscious. Mm-hmm. In fact, I wouldn't have mentioned that if people had asked me to say, like, what are the top five things about your work?
Right.
So it's interesting that you brought that up, because I can kind of see how you would see that, mm-hmm. and it's totally just because I'm a big hippie. It's not a conscious thing.
Right. Well, I don't necessarily mean it literally as though you're promoting environmental ideologies or anything of that sort, but uh-huh. there's just an awareness of the environment, of nature, of, I mean, the plant scans and the photos of Prospect Park, all different things, and some of the work themselves. I mean, I didn't really think it through that much, but nonetheless, it seems like a big theme for you. There
yeah.
seems to be an awareness of that I don't see in that many artists. There's certainly not artists involved with technology. There seems to be
yeah.
like this. So anyway, I just wanted to
Yeah. Well, part of it might actually be a reaction against that my main profession for many years was in technology.
Right.
That it's kind of nice to get away from. I mean, I do make some totally computer-based instruments every year, but it's nice also to make things which are whittled out of wood mm-hmm. and don't involve a computer or a laser cutter or a milling machine or anything fancy.
Right.
Just grab a piece of dead wood from the park right. and hack at it with a saw until it becomes a whistle or something.
Right. Right, and by extension, some of the works that you've done in this Instrument a Day project are really just elemental, it seems, like just dealing with basic elements, or you know, water, wind, and
uh-huh.
so on, like a very just natural process kind of approach in many cases. So that,
yeah.
So I guess that's part of your reaction against the technology side of your life. So,
yeah.
Well, but what about your background? I mean, so you're from California originally?
Uh-huh.
And you
yeah.
grew up in the Bay Area or?
Yeah,
or
grew up around
South
suburb, suburbs of San Francisco.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know if that has anything to do with any of that, but eventually you came east to Philadelphia, at least, I
uh-huh.
guess. Was that your first time living when you went to Penn, or
yeah, that's right. That was
east?
The first time living on the East
right.
Coast was going to Philadelphia,
right.
and then after a while, I moved to New York for a job,
and
I've been here ever since.
And that's what I wanted to know: is how you got here. So when was that? When did you move to New York?
In 1998.
1998. Okay, so a while. Have you lived here in Prospect Park Slope all this time?
Or? Yeah, same apartment since 1988.
Since 1998. Wow.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, I guess it works.
I guess so. Yeah. Well, because it's rent stabilized, I can't move. I can't afford to move. So I'm stuck there forever.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's okay.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, good. Well, it's always great to have someone from the neighborhood here on the series. I mean, that's not a rule, but it's certainly
uh-huh.
something we shoot for when we can. And
yeah, I love it. I try to come every month if I can.
Right, and you've been here a lot, and I appreciate that. And well, fabulous. So let's just look ahead to what we're going to do here with your performance.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen, apart from the piece you already described?
Uh-huh.
The new piece that you're going to invent.
Yes. Well, it's not inventing from scratch, but my first time really trying it.
Right.
But yeah, we're going to probably go straight from this to a little improvisation with three or four of the some recent and some older instrument today instruments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe take a break and then do the new instrument today thing, which I'm being coy about, but you'll see what it is soon. And then after that, I'd like to do a project which is totally unrelated to instrument today, but it's a performance I've done three or four times now, which I really enjoy, which is a kind of live internet video looping, where I'm actually searching for videos on the internet and mixing them as I go.
Right, and you have your own method for looping these things. Am I right? Or
pretty much, yeah.
So we'll leave that at that. We'll leave it that at that. But
yeah.
Well, great. Well, so what else? So apart from your appearance later this month, what else is going on for you this year or in the near future?
Let's see. In March, I'm going to Tampa for another installment of the Musical House Project. I might have mentioned that to you before. There was a few years ago, I went to New Orleans for a project called the Sound Sculpture Shantytown, where they brought a bunch of artists to basically take the lumber from a 100-year-old shack that had been blown down in Hurricane Katrina and use it to build a shantytown of little artist-built houses that all incorporated sound sculptures and instruments in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So that project was a big success. They had a lot of musicians come through and basically play the shantytown as if it were a weird orchestra. And after about a year, that had to be taken down because it wasn't really 100% legal for humans for visitors to walk through.
Right.
Being basically just a bunch of thrown together stuff, but beautifully done, but it wasn't something that could stay forever. But
this was in the immediate or soon after Katrina?
It was a while later, actually. It was just maybe 3 years ago.
I see. But ultimately, it had to be disassembled.
Yeah. But the project was a big success, and they've done sort of satellite versions of that, smaller versions of this same project in other cities.
Hmm.
And so I'm going to help with the Tampa installation next month.
So they're reconstructing the same shanty town?
No, in this case, it's basically starting from scratch, collaborating with some local and some out-of-town artists from Tampa.
I see.
To make something mostly new with some elements of the old shantytown.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And that's when is that happening?
It's first. I think I'm going there in the first week of March, and they're having their opening will be about March 25th or so. They'll have a few nights of concerts.
Mm-hmm. In Tampa, Florida.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I've never been to Tampa, so I have no idea what to expect. I'm told that at the place where this is happening, there's a resident alligator who lives in the river nearby and sometimes comes up to visit.
Oh, well, it does sound like Florida.
Yep, sure does.
Well, good. Well, that sounds exciting.
Yeah. They told me I could bring my dog, but I really want to keep him indoors.
Yeah, I guess
if there's going to be an alligator.
An alligator. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you keep him on a leash, no?
Uh-huh.
Well,
yeah.
Still.
Still. Yeah, I'm going to keep him away from the alligator.
Okay. Good. And anything else you want to tell us about? Coming up or otherwise?
Nope, nothing I can think of.
Okay. Well, great. Well, I think that's a great start to the evening, and I thank you for speaking with me.
And, thank you.
Thank you for being a part of the series. I'm really excited that you agreed to join us here. So
thank you.
So we'll take a little break.
And that was my conversation with sound artist Ranjit Bhatnagar on February 11th. The evening continued with a live performance of several recent mixed media works, and we'll continue tonight's program with a couple of excerpts from that performance. Let's start with this mashup audio-visual work that Ranjit constructed in real time using assorted found Vine videos from the internet. Here is Ranjit Bhatnagar performing trumpet practice. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Musical Ecologies Radio Hour. For more information, visit our website at musicalecologies.net.